tired of being overwhelmed by your email inbox? Dive into this episode of the Speak Up Podcast to discover the secrets to mastering the art of email communication. Welcome to Speak Up, the podcast for high-performing introverts and you social introverts. That means ambiverts also. This is where we reveal the charisma and communication secrets of the A-listers so that you get the recognition and the opportunities you deserve. I'm your host, Laura Camacho, aka your magical communication godmother, coach, and strategist. Take note that we now release episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And this is episode number 242. Our guest is Grace Aldridge Foster. She is a leading email expert in the world. And you can find her bio in the show notes. She is coming to us from Raleigh, North Carolina. Welcome to the show, Grace. It's great to have you. And I'm delighted to know that you're not too far away. You're up in Raleigh, North Carolina. She's not far away from East Carolina University, where I used to be on faculty. And as you all know, listening, I'm in Charleston, South Carolina. So we've got two Southern women having a conversation about communicating better. And the good news for you all listening is that Grace is like the queen of email. Like, she has all the goods on how to deal with that beast of it, 200 emails flooding your box every day. So welcome, Grace, and tell us a little bit about your story, yet how you became the co-founder of Bold Type and a written communication expert.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me, Laura. I'm excited to have this conversation. It's so nice to speak to another Southern woman about communication. We learned all kinds of things about how to communicate growing up in the South.
We sure did. And I won't say bless your heart.
Well, let's see. I got my start doing writing training back when I was a student at Presbyterian College in Clinton, South Carolina. I was a writing center tutor as a student. And then later after I graduated, I ran the writing center there for a while and then started to do that work at Georgetown University when I was a graduate student there. And then that's where I met my business partner, Casey Mank, who I started Bold Type with. And it's also where I started training professionals in workplace writing skills. So I had always thought that I would, you know, become a professor and teach composition and literature courses. But once I found that work several years ago, I really enjoyed it. I felt that teaching adults was sort of more my thing than you know, working with kids. And I've kind of never looked back.
Awesome. Yes. And I've also, you know, made that switch from academia to the corporate world. And I love how, you know, what we focus on the practical and helping people with this conversation, with this presentation, with this email today. And it is very rewarding. So I know that email is kind of a thing. I hear a lot of complaints about it. I also, some emails, the ones that are easy to answer, not a problem. But when it requires more thought or it could be delicate, give us a state of the union of email at work today.
That's a great prompt. Well, you know, email is still the cornerstone of workplace communication, right? There are plenty of other platforms that we also use to communicate through, you know, Slack and Microsoft Teams. I mean, I even text my team quite a lot, you know, so it's sort of instantaneous. And so there are plenty of other ways that we communicate in writing at work, but email for, you know, a few decades now, it still reigns supreme. And you would think that given how long email has been around, that we would have better habits around it. But it's still, I think, one of the biggest gaps in people's professional education. You know, it's something that for some reason, we're just expected to know how to do well without ever really having been taught how to do it. I mean, I certainly never was sort of formally taught how to write emails when I was in undergrad or in graduate school either time. You know, I had to kind of figure it out on the job, and most people do. But because people are so bad at writing good emails, we're all learning from other people who are doing it poorly as well. So a lot of the issues around email kind of compound. And so thinking about sort of like the state of the union with email, we all have to email. It's sort of an essential. We don't know how to do it very well. And it creates a ton of anxiety in almost everyone I work with, right? Like there are all these funny memes on social media and stuff like that about how awful email is. But it's true. I hear it from real people over and over, and I've experienced it myself, that this feeling of dread when we think about our inboxes, when we think about sending emails. And I think, like you said, there's a big difference between, you know, a quick response, yes, I'm available at that time, or no, I didn't get the attachment, or something right. like that. There's a big difference between that and then something that requires a lot of effort. And it's not just sort of technical effort, like how do I express this information clearly? It's also kind of like emotional effort, because you have to make sure that your tone comes across the right way. And you're trying to like manage a relationship, not just send a particular message. And it gets really complicated and it gets heavy. And then you compound that with the fact that people have really bad like inbox management habits. And email kind of runs our lives.
I'm going to just tell a quick funny story on my dad, who's a recently retired periodontist. So he was introduced to email very late in life, and he would have his secretary print them up, and then he would dictate the answers for her to answer, which, you know, if we could all do that, we all had personal secretaries, that might be a nice way to deal with it. But I don't think many people have that luxury. And I wanted to add, though, to your State of the Union, not only is it ubiquitous, and then now we even have to decide, well, do I put it in Slack, or do I put it in Teams, or do I send just a text, or do I put it in email? So we had that decision, that cognitive load. But it's also the email, I think, tends to be like the documentation trail, like your permanent record, and something that is once you hit send, it is out of your hands. Even if you say, I can't tell you how many times people have told me stories where I said, don't share this, this is preliminary, and it went out to everybody. So the issues can be that the tone is taken the wrong way, that it's too much information or too little information. What else? Maybe too many people included, or you're trying not to reply all, but then somebody was offended because you didn't include them. So that's another thing. How else can we get into trouble?
I think you hit the big ones for sure. Yeah, the tone isn't right. There's too much information or too little. And then the other stuff you're talking about kind of generally boils down to like email etiquette. Do you have good email etiquette, you know, in terms of what's the right time of day to send your messages to, you know, how to be polite in email, how much is too much. And I think a lot of really all of that comes down to often a lack of audience awareness. You don't really understand what it is that your recipient needs from that particular message. And that causes a lot of these issues, or a lot of mm-hmm. the angst around these issues, at least. So audience awareness, I think, is a big one. And then one of the other root causes of these problems is people are just in a hurry.
All the time. And then we're in a hurry to write them, and we're in a hurry to read them. How many times have we all said, if you would have read the email, this would have not happened?
Exactly. This is something we talk about in our trainings at Bulltype all the time. You know, we get frustrated when an email doesn't work, right? Like if we send an email and we don't get the response that we want, or there's no response, or someone clearly didn't read the information that we included in there, and we tend to get frustrated. And one of two things happens, right? We either think, oh, I'm embarrassed, I didn't do a good job, or why are they so lazy? Why didn't they do a good job?
Right.
Yeah. And the truth is, it's probably both.
Yes,
like
exactly.
We aren't writing emails that are easy to read and respond to, and our audience is reading in a hurry. That's a coping mechanism. You know, we all do that because we're inundated with emails and all other manner of communication.
Well, I'm sure in your class, you're able to go into lots of specifics and probably get down to exercises and things that people can do. But help our audience out. Like, tell us, what should we be thinking about when we've got that, not the easy email, the not easy email? Like, what are the things that can help us with that situation? That's part one. And then part two, just lay on us the email etiquette? And I especially want to know, like, when is it rude not to answer? Take it away, Grace.
I'll answer the easiest one first.
Okay.
I think it's totally fine not to respond to those emails.
Oh, God.
You know, the thing is, the people sending those emails know that most people aren't going to respond to them.
Okay. Okay.
So I think what people can do first to solve a lot of the problems that we've talked about with email is by starting by answering a few key questions before you write the email. The first one is, think about who your audience is. Who is my audience? Who is my primary reader? And I say primary because, you know, sometimes you are emailing a group of 20 people at once or 100 people at once, and you do have multiple audiences that you have to balance, but it's hard to empathize with a group of people. It's much easier to empathize with a single person. So if you focus on one person who's receiving your email, think of that person specifically, think of them by name, and think through what you know about that person already. And specifically, you know, what's your relationship to them, but also how much do they already know or care about your topic? If they already know a lot about it, you don't have to explain much at all. If they already care a lot about it, then they're going to read whatever you write. But if they don't know much and they don't care much, or they don't know yet that they should care, then you're going to have to work a lot harder to figure out how to convey enough information, right, without overwhelming them, and also kind of persuade them to pay attention, persuade them to care. So thinking through your audience, your relationship with them, and how much they already know or care is really important. That's A, that's audience. So I'm going to reveal an acronym. R, the second thing, is to think through the result that you want from that email. What is it that you want to happen because you wrote that email? I think too often, you know, we're like mired in our to-do lists and we're just thinking about sending something off. We're thinking about what we need to get off our desk. But if you think instead, what is it that I'm trying to accomplish? What response do I need from my audience? What action do I need them to take? What's the most important piece of information that I need them to have? And how will I know that they read it? You know, I'm going to ask them to confirm or whatever. Is there a link that I need them to click? So what is the result that you need from that email? And then T is tone. The third thing is tone. And this is, you plan your tone strategically. You think through, okay, what tone do I need to take to help move that particular audience to the result that I've defined? So that's the art of audience awareness. It's the art of writing emails or writing, frankly, anything at work. It'll increase the likelihood that the people will actually read and respond to your emails. So that's the first thing that I would say is if you struggle with writing those more challenging emails, focus on the art before you draft the email. And this doesn't have to take a long time. Yeah, it can be a mental checklist. You can write it on a sticky note. It doesn't have to take a long time.
That's so how I love the acronym ART, audience, result, and tone. And the result, how much selling do we have to do in this? Because I talk a lot about selling ideas because that's like the last thing that's a technical, unless you're in sales and marketing, you don't really think about selling your ideas. You just think about sharing them. But it really is to use the rhetoric, to use the persuasion. So what are some ways to make our emails, like I know you have some specific ideas about subject lines. And I think the subject line is what determines how we prioritize that email, at least in our minds. Help us out with better subject lines.
Sure thing. And what I'll say about selling too, before I talk about subject lines specifically, is I think when you're trying to get buy-in from other people, you're not just sharing your ideas, but you have to, you know, get the other person to care. It's about keeping the focus on what the so what is for them. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily about why you think it's important. Again, literally putting yourself in their shoes and thinking, why should they care? Mm-hmm. So I think selling sometimes in that regard can seem like you're trying to do something icky, but it requires an act of imagination. What is that other person going to care about? Why is this going to be impactful for them? And just communicate that. I think it's not about like rhetorical tactics so much as just like think through why this will matter to them and make sure that you address that rather than just talking about why it matters to you.
Such a great distinction. Yes. And that's actually off-putting when you talk about how it's going to help me. And literally, you don't care. You just want, well, how is it going to help me? And
especially if that person doesn't know you. Right? It's like, if they don't know you very well, then it's just human. It's natural to go, well, okay, I don't know. So why should I, you know, spend my time or my energy on something that's important to you if I don't know, you know, what it has to do with me? Okay. So to your question about subject lines, because I think that there's also a clear connection between selling a particular idea or making it clear why it should matter to someone else, why it's important. And then like the tactical skill of writing great subject lines. A lot of times people are very vague in their subject lines. So it's one of the most common problems I see is it'll just be like a two-word topic, like project update.
Oh, yeah.
But I might be getting, you know, 15 project updates in a given week from different people and things like that. So that's not very helpful, especially when it comes to like documenting something. You know, your inbox is an archive. You can search through it. So if I'm searching for a particular project and I've got 50 emails in my inbox that are just titled project update, you know, it makes it difficult to find what you need to find. So a lot of times subject lines are not specific enough. Mm-hmm. So we recommend that, you know, make them a little longer, not just one or two words. You've usually got about 8 to 10 words before your inbox cuts off your subject line, depending on which provider you use, whether it's on a computer or on mobile, but usually about 8 to 10 words. So use that. Use the space that you're given. Be as clear and specific as possible. It helps a lot to use action words, to use verbs at the beginning of your subject lines. So go ahead and preview for your reader what it is that they're meant to do with a particular message. Are they meant to respond?
Or FYI, is like no response needed?
Yes. Go ahead and let them know. And part of what that does is it helps them triage their inbox. It helps them instantly sort of sort things into their workflow for the day. You know, what's going to take more time from me, more of my time, what's going to be a quick response. Something I love to do too, especially if it's a quick ask, is to include a time estimate, you know, put in brackets like 3 minutes.
But in the subject line?
In the subject line.
Oh, that's very interesting. I've never heard that before. Very cool. All right.
I always ask people in our email masterclass, what percentage of your emails do you delete without opening? Mm-hmm. I do get a wide variety of answers, but at least everyone says at least 20%. And I would say all the way up to 90%. I'm probably in like the 80% category. I delete a lot of the emails I receive without opening them. Everyone deletes at least some of the emails that they receive without opening them.
Right.
So the first hurdle when you're emailing someone is you just have to get them to open your email. And that's why that subject line is so important.
Is there a trick? Like, is it like 150 words per minute? How would you know how long it would take somebody to read your message?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So people read typically at about 300 words per minute, which is pretty fast. So people can scan or triage their inbox extremely quickly. You've got to make a strong impression quick. It's got to be tangible and very valuable in order to get someone to open your email, right? And so I think using those specific verbs and really specific nouns and actions, using the word you, using numerals, all of those things are just going to kind of think of it as like stopping someone in their scan as they're scanning their inbox. And then once they open your message, they can read pretty quickly. And most emails should be shorter than 300.
Yes. When in doubt, make it shorter. Do you believe in like putting things in bold and using lots of white space? Just take a look at it visually and see if you can make it easier for people to read, right?
Absolutely. Yes. And there's a lot of eye tracking data to support that. People skim and they scan. They often read in an F-shaped pattern. So their attention sort of leans left and towards the top of a screen. And then their attention drops off at the end, and especially in the bottom right-hand corner. So yes, I definitely recommend that you break up large text walls into small little chunks of text and separate them with white space, bold something if it's really important, but also try to keep it towards the top of your email. One problem I see a lot is that people will save their call to action or their CTA for the end. which might be okay if it's a really short email. But if it's a long email and you save your, you know, your call to action or your next step for the end, people will never get there.
Grace, this is so helpful. I never thought about putting that time estimate and the F shape, for especially for those of us who are visual, that lets us know, like, you've got like the top line and then another line and then they're gone. Do we need to be personal in our emails? What is the skinny on that?
Yeah. So I think part of what you're getting at is pleasantries. I don't know if you remember during kind of the height of the pandemic when we were all working from home and just filled with existential angst and, you know,
yes,
and everything, the email pleasantries started getting more and more elaborate. Do you remember this?
Yes. Yes. And everything was stay safe, be safe, yeah, exactly. Be safe.
Exactly. And, you know, at first that was really helpful. I think it made us all feel more connected and like we were all in it together and it was solidarity and it was great. But over time, it sort of started to lose its impact and almost feel a little bit comical. And I would say that generally speaking is true for pleasantries, especially if you're at the beginning of a relationship with someone, a professional relationship, you're probably going to spend a little more time on those professional pleasantries. You know, you're probably not going to dive straight into an ask. You're going to try to acknowledge the other person's humanity and be polite. What would you do if you were meeting them in person? You would shake their hand, right?
Right.
Hello.
Right.
You would introduce yourself. Well, those things make sense, I think, via email as well. However, if you know someone well, you've worked with them for a long time, you communicate with them regularly, you don't need to shake their hand every time you see them. You don't need to introduce yourself every time you see them. You have rapport, you have an existing relationship, and you can cut a lot of that stuff out.
Okay. But what about the one sentence that everybody writes?
Yeah.
I hope this email finds you well.
Sure. Sure.
Is there an alternative?
Let me just say too, there's an advantage to keeping your pleasantry at the beginning of your email really short also, because then your preview text, the thing, the little snippet that pops up below your subject line, is more specific and helps give the reader more information before they open. So there are a number of reasons I like to keep pleasantries really short. So things that I try to do in an effort to shorten the pleasantry and just make it slightly less generic is I'm a big fan of like, happy Friday. And then plunge right in, you know, to my ask or something like that. Or I think there's nothing wrong with a quick, you know, hope you're well or hope all is well. I think like the full on, I hope this email finds you well. You know, it takes up a lot of your preview text.
It does. Okay.
And at this point, it's just so common that I think it just doesn't mean anything. It's almost invisible.
Right. So, yeah. Wow. I love that we're getting so many specific things. So you want to say, let me, happy Friday, happy Wednesday, good day, or maybe just something super short so that you can maximize the preview text. And this is not an egotistical thing. This is in service to, because good communication is in service to our audience, to help them with their cognitive overload and overwhelm, to make a decision, to realize that your email is on the A list. And they can just, you know, discard all those other ones by getting more important information up front, meaning at the top. Think of that F. I mean, that to me is life-changing. The F shape, you've got those two lines that they're going to scan, and then it's all over. Are we making anything, any egregious errors with etiquette, or is it just, you know, minor things like replying all or making it too long? Is there anything that if there were one or two things you wish everybody would stop doing or start doing right now, as far as etiquette, what would those things be?
So the first thing I would say is ask yourself if you actually need to send that email. I think that the biggest etiquette mistake, Laura, is sending emails that don't need to be sent. And sometimes it's just that email isn't the right format for that particular communication. It would be better on a phone call or on a Zoom meeting or in an in-person meeting. So sometimes it's just that people are choosing the wrong format for a particular communication. Sometimes it's just that it doesn't need to be sent at all. Sometimes an update is a non-update. make everyone's lives just a little bit easier by not sending stuff that doesn't need to be sent in the first place or isn't ready to be sent in the first place. And then the second thing I would do, this is very specific, but I see more and more folks sending emails at strange times of the day.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think depending on your industry or your organization, maybe this is fine, especially if you're working with a lot of people who are in different time zones. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Not a big deal. Everyone sort of understands that you might be receiving emails at strange hours, but you aren't necessarily expected to respond to them. But I think it's very easy to schedule send your emails. So if you are working at 10 p.m. because that's when you could fit it in, or you have a project that you have to wrap up, and just because you're writing an email at 10 p.m. doesn't mean that you have to send it at 10 p.m. You can schedule it for 9 a.m. the next morning.
Yeah. And I know I sometimes use Saturdays to catch up on emails.
Sure.
But I don't want them to feel like they have to read right. it. So just schedule it for Monday morning.
That's right.
And it'll get there bright and early
exactly.
and take over their morning, hopefully. Well, this has been so helpful as far as having a fresh lens, a way of thinking about our email instead of getting so in the weeds of the message and, you know, writing down all those things, really go back to, well, does it really need to be sent in the first place? And how are you helping the audience? You know, how are you helping these people with your message? I think that is transformational. And then you've given us so many specifics about word count and using numerals and maximizing your subject line, not being too vague, not having too much information. I have one more question and then I'll let you close. I know one of your areas of expertise is the connection between a person's personal brand or reputation, executive presence, and their workplace writing. So what is up with that?
Even if you don't consider yourself to be a writer, like a capital right. W writer, you know, you are an engineer or mm-hmm. something like that. You know, writing is not your profession or your strong suit. We still all have to write. Mm-hmm. And your writing goes before you.
Ooh, it's like your ambassador.
Exactly. Your writing, I always say this, your writing speaks for you when you aren't in the room. And that's why there's such a strong connection between your writing and your personal brand, is that it's communicating a lot about you when you aren't physically there to kind of reinforce that or course correct with things like body language and tone of voice, or, you know, you can't gauge how someone is sort of reacting to you or to your writing. You have to work harder in your writing to make the right impression. But again, it speaks for you. It's often your first impression on someone, you know, an email
yes.
or a website bio or something like that. Again, whether you are a professional writer or not, but so many people don't think about that because they think, oh, right, my writing doesn't matter because that's not what I do.
Exactly. Exactly. They just think of it as a means to an end. Which it is, but it's also an end in itself. So it's
that's
just
right.
part of who you are. That's
right.
That is so good. One thing I recommend to people who want to get better email, now that I know to send them to you, but before that, I would tell them to collect emails that they thought were well done. And
yes.
then they could kind of, you know, maybe form their own templates or follow other people who are better at it, as a way of just having a model for yourself. Because we all know we have plenty of emails that are not good. Grace, this has been so helpful on a topic that can be burdensome for a lot of us. And definitely we've got some ways to polish and just make it sharper and more and better service to our audience. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you think these extremely smart and good-looking professionals need to hear?
Only that they should all download Grammarly.
Oh, yes.
This is not sponsored. I'm not sponsored by Grammarly. It's just that, you know, at this point, there are so many great tools out there to help you write better emails, better anything. You can pay for them, but also the free versions are so great. And I just think that we should all be using the tools that are available to us, and they're good tools. Plenty of other tools that I recommend, and people are welcome to email me if they want to hear about them, or we can put them in the show notes or
okay.
something.
But, sure.
Yeah, I just think everyone should find the tool that they like, whether it's Grammarly or Hemingway editor or whatever, and use it. Even experienced, skilled writers use these tools and they can make a big difference. And I highly recommend them.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you so much, Grace. Now from this day forward, I'm expecting everybody to write me beautifully crafted, intentional, results focused, with a delightful tone emails at all times. That's your homework assignment, everybody. Make your emails better, and we'll catch everybody on the next episode.